Okay, everyone knows real estate, right? It's that classic path to long-term wealth. But asking, where's the best place to invest in 2025? Well, that feels trickier than ever. We're seeing these stubbornly high interest rates, economic headwinds in some places, slowdowns. It's, a bit daunting. But here's the thing. If you actually dig a little deeper, the story changes. Opportunity hasn't vanished. It's just shifted. There's still rapid development, rising values, just in more specific spots. So our mission today, let's cut through all that noise. Forget the short-term hype. We're zeroing in on locations that offer real, lasting value. And we want this tailored for you, the listener trying to figure this out.
Yeah. And the first thing I think we absolutely have to get on the table is this. There just isn't one best place. It doesn't exist. The perfect investment. It's totally personal. Depends entirely on your goals, what kind of cash flow you need, maybe your budget, and honestly, probably most importantly, how much risk you're comfortable taking. I mean, think about it. Someone might be chasing, high-yield commercial property in a city that's growing incredibly fast, but is maybe less stable politically. That's a high-risk play, right? Then someone else, they might just want steady, predictable rental income from a quiet suburb in a mature market. Totally different goals, totally different places. So today, we'll dig into the factors driving real opportunity, compare those developed versus emerging markets, the pros and cons, and look at some newer ways, like fractional ownership, that make global investing way more accessible now. Okay, let's get into it.
Right, because the force is really shaping global real estate now in 2025.
Oh, right.
They're bigger than just local ups and downs, aren't they? These feel like macro shifts. We're definitely still feeling the effects of higher interest rates. That obviously puts a damper on demand in lots of developed countries. But it also seems to be speeding up these migration pattern shifts. Mm. People are actively choosing affordability, lifestyle, locations they might not have considered before. That's that whole remote work effect, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Remote work isn't just a temporary thing anymore. For a lot of people, it's just how work works now. And that really decouples professional life from needing to be physically near those expensive downtown business hubs. So investors, they're looking wider. People are putting quality of life and, frankly, cost of living much higher on the list. And that's pushing up demand and prices in secondary cities, even tertiary ones all over the world. And another big one we can't ignore, sustainability. It's moved beyond being just a nice to have. Yeah, it's actually driving value now. Our sources are showing that eco-friendly, energy-efficient buildings, they consistently fetch higher prices. If you ignore that, you might end up holding something that loses value.
Okay, so that leads right into this core choice investors face. Chasing stability versus chasing speed. How do all these big trends play into that developed versus emerging market question?
Well, it makes the choice clearer, I think. Developed markets. Your Dubais, Lisbons, maybe Sydneys, they offer stability. That's the main draw. You're generally looking at steadier property value growth, reliable rental demand, because the infrastructure is already there. It's sort of the anchor for a safer portfolio.
Okay, predictable.
Right. But then you have emerging markets. And that's where the potential for faster capital appreciation often lies. You see massive government investment in infrastructure, really rapid urbanization, strong economic growth spurts. Parts of Southeast Asia, maybe Eastern Europe, even certain U.S. states seeing huge booms. So the insight is pretty straightforward, really. If your main goal is reliable income, steady cash flow, then stability is probably your priority, developed markets. But if they're aiming for quicker growth, that capital appreciation, and you're okay with taking on more risk, then emerging markets offer that potential upside. It's about matching the market's risk profile to your own financial comfort zone.
Got it. So it's not enough to just follow headlines about hot or trending locations. If we want lasting value, not just a quick flip based on hype, we need like a fundamental checklist. So let's get into those six key factors, the things that really need to be there for an investment to feel solid long term.
Exactly. These are the markers we'd use to seriously vet any location. If a place only checks maybe one or two boxes, it's probably hype. Not a sustainable investment. Okay, first two are absolutely foundational. Number one, economic growth and job creation. You need a local economy that can actually support demand. And look beyond just the headline GDP number. Are specific industries growing? Is foreign investment coming in? Are companies actually expanding there? That directly feeds into rental demand and eventually property values.
Makes sense.
Number two, population growth and urbanization. Pretty simple. Is the area attracting?
Okay, but those first two, population growth, economic growth, sometimes that creates its own problems, doesn't it? Like boom towns where everything feels maxed out. If a million people arrive, but the roads and schools can't handle it, Is that growth still a net positive for property value long term?
That's a fantastic point. And it brings us straight to factor number three, infrastructure and transport links. This is crucial. Seeing new highways, airports getting expanded, new metro lines, major commercial developments. These are tangible signs of long-term commitment, either from government or big companies. When a city invests heavily in upgrading its infrastructure, it attracts skilled workers. It attracts major corporate tenants. That promises better future returns compared to a place that's already bursting at the seams.
Right, it signals future capacity.
Exactly. Factor four is maybe less exciting, but vital. Political stability and safety. Low crime, stable government. This reduces perceived risk, especially for foreign investors. It means policies that support business are likely to stick around. Factor five is about the here and now. Rental demand and yield potential. Everyone loves seeing their property value go up, sure. But high rental yields, that gives you cash flow now. That income helps carry the investment while you wait for that longer-term appreciation. It de-risks things a bit.
And the last one, number six.
The regulatory environment. This can be the deal breaker. A place could look great on paper, growth, jobs, yield, but if buying property there as a foreigner is a legal nightmare.
Like complex taxes, rules about taking money out, limits on who can own what.
Precisely. If the bureaucracy is intense, the risk profile just shoots up. You really want to see regions that actively welcome foreign investment with clear rules, streamlined processes, maybe even incentives.
So you have to weigh that immediate cash flow potential, factor five, against the potential long-term headache of factor six. High yield is great, but not if it costs you endless stress managing it.
That's the balance.
Okay, so applying those six filters helps us move from just talking theory to finding actual places. Let's use this framework now to look at that 2025 snapshot. Which global spots seem to blend those strong fundamentals with being relatively investor-friendly right now?
Okay, let's look at a few. We could start with Dubai, UAE. It pops up consistently. Why? Strategic location, obviously, connecting Europe, Asia, Africa. Very strong demand from expats. And crucially, that tax-free rental income. That hits factor five hard. Yields there are pretty robust, often in the 6-8% range. A lot of that is driven by luxury and waterfront properties, which are still very hot.
Okay, high yield tax benefits. What about somewhere like Lisbon? Different vibe, right?
Totally different appeal. Lisbon, Portugal. Yields are a bit lower, maybe 4-6%, but it scores really high on the regulatory side, residency incentives, for example. Plus, booming tourism and this huge influx of digital nomads and remote workers. It's almost a textbook case of factor two, that lifestyle-driven population growth, boosting long-term potential.
And how does that compare to, say, Riyadh, which feels like it's all about massive top-down transformation?
Riyadh, Saudi Arabia is fascinating because the growth is so deliberately engineered by policy. Yields are around 5-7%. The driver there is Vision 2030. We're not just talking about a few new roads here. This is a national strategy for economic diversification away from oil, huge infrastructure spending, social changes. It's massive. For investors, that translates into a surge in demand for mixed-use developments, hotels, hospitality. It really appeals if you want to align your investment with huge state-backed infrastructure projects. Hits factor one and three hard.
Okay, and for a more classic emerging market play?
Then you might look at Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. Economic growth rates are incredibly strong, fueled by a young population, rapid urbanization. Yields hover around 5-6%. The key factor there, I'd say, is number three again, infrastructure. They're consistently upgrading transport links, expanding the city, which keeps pushing property values up, especially in areas just outside the core, suggests real room for capital growth.
And bringing it back to the U.S.
Austin, Texas is a good example of a stable, innovation-driven economy within a developed market. Yields might be a bit lower, say 4-5%, but what you're buying into is the resilience of that booming tech sector. Very high in-migration, factor two, strong job market. It's less about explosive gains, maybe, and more about securing a reliable asset tied to a really strong local economy. Demand for housing and mixed use there remains intense.
So looking at those five, Dubai, Lisbon, Riyadh, Ho Chi Minh City, Austin volume, the common thread seems to be that blend.
Mm.
Strong economic drivers, yes, but also conditions that actually make it feasible for investors to participate.
Exactly. Whether you prioritize the tax breaks in Dubai, the lifestyle in Lisbon, the sheer scale of change in Riyadh, the raw growth in Vietnam, or the stability in Austin, they all combine fundamentals with accessibility. And the smart approach often is diversification, right? Maybe balancing risk by having a foot in both established cash flow markets and some of these higher growth emerging ones.
Which leads perfectly into that fundamental strategic question for you listening. Do I invest close to home
or do I go international? For years, investing locally felt safer, didn't it? You understand the rules, the currency, the market trends, or at least you can find local agents who do. Property management seems easier. But the downside is clear. All your eggs are in one economic basket. Your returns are tied completely to how that single country or even city is doing.
Right. And investing internationally, that holds the promise of potentially higher yields, maybe faster growth in some markets, and that crucial diversification across different economies, different currencies. That can be a significant financial shield. The hurdle, though, has always been the complexity. Figuring out foreign laws, different tax rules, just the practicalities of managing something potentially thousands of miles away, it felt overwhelming for many.
Yeah, it used to feel like a hard choice. Simplicity versus potential upside and diversification. You had to pick one. But technology has really changed that game, hasn't it? It's made accessing global returns possible without needing to physically own and manage a property overseas yourself.
Absolutely. We're seeing the rise of platforms designed specifically to bridge that gap, to make it accessible. So for you listening, if you're thinking about diversifying globally, but the idea of buying a condo in Lisbon or managing repairs in Ho Chi Minh City sounds like a nightmare, fractional ownership is a really interesting development.
And just to clarify, this isn't quite like buying a REIT, right?
Not exactly. A traditional REIT is often a share in a big, diversified fund of properties. Fractional ownership, especially through newer platforms, often means buying a verifiable, secure piece of a specific pre-vetted project or property. So you get direct exposure to these high-performing global markets, maybe even properties in the cities we just discussed, but through platforms that handle the vetting, the management, the legal stuff. A platform like, say, Gamma Assets uses things like blockchain for security and transparent processes to kind of democratize access. The key point for you is you can explore global diversification, manage currency risk, potentially access higher yields, all from your desk.
Okay, so pulling this all together, what does it really mean? The best place to invest in 2025 isn't a dot on a map. It sounds like it's more about finding that specific market, could be residential, could be commercial, that aligns perfectly with your personal financial goals, but also has those strong, verifiable fundamentals and clear growth potential we talked about.
That's exactly the synthesis. You want to match your need for stability, which might come from local investments or established international markets, with your appetite for higher growth, often found in those emerging international spots. And always keep the asset type in mind. Residential property tends to have more consistent demand. It's generally simpler to manage, often better for first-timers. Commercial properties, they can offer higher yields, yes, but usually come with bigger risks, potentially longer periods with no tenants, and definitely need more capital up front.
All right, so given everything we've discussed, this rising interest in lifestyle locations, the remote work effect, the increasing ease of accessing global markets through things like fractional ownership, here's something to think about. How much will our traditional ideas about property ownership needing to be nearby, needing deep local knowledge, how much more will those ideas dissolve over the next, say, 5 years? And could a specific niche, maybe truly decentralized hubs built just for digital nomads or universally adopted standards for eco-friendly developments, become the next bedrock for generating lasting real estate value globally? Something to mull over as you start your own deep dive.